Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Shit Show with Jabo. How are you doing, motherfuckers? How's everybody doing out there? Where are you? I know. What's up, Jamie? You listening, brother? Who else is listening? Man, like I said, don't be hipsters in the back of the room. Let me know. Share the love. I see the downloads, for Christ's sake. If you're listening, let me know. If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. This is Jabo. Thank you once again for listening. I'm stacking some episodes because I got to dedicate pretty much January 16th to February 16th to music. I am putting together a 4-song EP, I guess, demo, I don't know. I can't wait to get the finished product. I'm really stoked on it. I'm always stoked to record. And this time is no different, other than it's been a while, you know? The last time I recorded was with... Well, last time I recorded anything... No, okay, so let me think here. I put out 3 videos with the band House of Lights about 2 years ago. And actually, I'm really proud of those particular recordings. There's a song called Real Fake, a song called Hot as Blonde Ladies, and a song called Glow. You guys can look those up on YouTube, House of Lights. And it's with my buddy Sean, who kind of engineered the whole thing. He would come up with really bizarre, spastic guitar and bass lines, and I would just tie it all together with vocals. And it was very intuitive, you know? The process was so easy for me. It's great working with other people, 3 or 4 people. It can be so very powerful, you know, synergy and the way humans interact together, which is really so important, you know? And it's why bands are great. It's not really the individuals oftentimes. It's how they all act together, you know? I keep bringing up Nirvana. Nirvana is one of my favorite bands, but have you ever heard the songs from Nevermind with a different drummer, like with Chad Channing? And Chad Channing's a friend of mine. Like, he's a great dude, and I think he's a great drummer. I think Bleach sounds great, but he wasn't the right guy to play the Nevermind songs. You know, people talk about Kurt Cobain being this tremendous force and this genius and all that, and he was. But the record that put him through to the big time, without an amazing drummer, an amazing, like, rock pop drummer like Dave Grohl, the shit never would have seen the light of day. I mean, if you hear those demos that were going to be on Sub Pop that they did with Butch Vig, that were supposed to be the record with Chad Channing, they're not really fucking good. I mean, those songs are still there, but it's really not the same. I get talking about my favorite bands and everything else goes away. It's kind of fucked up, right? And Nirvana at this point is like classic rock. You know, Nirvana was 1994, the guy died. That's 25 years ago. Now, when I was in 9th grade listening to Jimi Hendrix and the Beatles and all that shit from like 1970, 69... You know, that was 1991, 92, and that less time had passed, you know, between the fucking Beatles, who I consider like gods among men to that time, to where like Nirvana and when he died and now. It's so weird. I think the internet kind of keeps memories alive. I think the internet gives us the illusion that we're younger than we are, because you can just pull up, you know, Freddie Mercury from 1978, you know, and feel that energy, you know, him singing Don't Stop Me Now. I love that song. But you know what I mean? Everything's just so immediate, you know. Back then in 1992, before the internet, I could look at some pictures of the Beatles, but I couldn't go on YouTube and just watch a performance of them as, you know, 23-year-old dudes and feel like that was now, kind of, you know? Shit, I didn't play my theme song. That's okay. I'm not going to play it this episode. I know you guys... I hope you guys sing along to it. I have this vision, this fantasy that there's people out there singing my theme song, occasionally humming along, you know, the theme song to this show. And as soon as I figure out how to go on YouTube and make videos with sound, I can't do that. I haven't figured out how to do it. If anybody out there has any hints on how to do that, just let me know. But as soon as I figure that out, I'm going to, you know, put different clips. And it's really probably going to push this show to the next level, I think. I hope. Because I have so many great clips, you know. It's like maybe you don't have time to. Maybe people's attention spans are getting even shorter than a 30-minute podcast. Maybe you need two-minute clips, you know. Maybe you need Calvin Johnson from Beat Happening talking about why he wrote this song and how interesting that guy is. Or, you know, maybe you need to hear Ariel Pink talk about how the Russian investigation is filled with literal retards, you know. Maybe you need to hear these things in small clips, in little bite-sized morsels. I don't know. Anyway, I'm going to do that. I'm going to get a channel at some point. It's just, I got bigger fish to fry, man, right now, you know. I'm going to put that out. I was, today, it's funny, the music that, your favorite bands, and the movies, and the things that hit you at a certain age. And I think the trick is to try to keep your mind fresh and engaged to where you're having all these throughout life, not just when you're, not like the glory days when you're a teenager. You know, those weren't the glory days, really. Right now is the glory day, right? Every day is the glory day, right? This is glorious, a glorious day. And we need to keep our minds open for new things. I just... was listening to this guy today named Alberto Ocasio-Cortez. That's not his name. Alberto Garcia, I believe his name is. He has a band called Alien Tango, and he's brilliant. He's this like Spanish guy who lives in London. Check this guy out, Alien Tango. Spanish guy, I believe, lives in London, and he's a very kind of handsome, charismatic-looking dude. But myself, I've always been, like, kind of abnormally skinny, in my opinion. Like, I had a real kind of issue with it, you know? Real self-conscious since about the age of, oh, I don't know, fucking 7. But now I'm 43, and I don't know, it's weird. I'm skinny, but I've got, like, a gut, you know, which I'm trying to lose. And I look all right. If I stand up straight, you can't really tell. But anyway, whatever. This dude's about 23 years old, and he's a total genius. He reminds me a little bit of Ariel Pink, although I think he came across it honestly. I don't know that he was a huge fan. Maybe he was. But he strikes me as somebody that just had a similar sound, and people told him they sounded alike. But he just keeps coming out with these videos. Alien Tango. He's a skinny dude, and he flaunts his body in these amazing videos he does and talks about having sex and, like, runs down the street in very short shorts. It's bizarre. I know it sounds like I'm getting gay about him, but I'm not. It's just I'm fascinated by this dude because he really just sticks it out there, you know, as far as, like, he's a slightly strange-looking guy, you know, and he just, all his videos, he very much flaunts himself. I respect that anyway. I find it amusing. And I find it pretty awesome. Alien Tango, check it out. Today I was at work, and I have a long history of with the band Guns N' Roses. Also, we'll just talk about music on this episode of The Shit Show with J-Bo. My very first memory of that band is I was sitting, it was in Florida, and, you know, before my mom kind of married into, you know, St. Augustine royalty, a guy named Ned, my stepdad, who owns a restaurant, and he's beloved around town, and he's a great cook and a great guy. We had our issues back in the day. But before that, I don't remember being in a lot of houses with air conditioning, you know? I remember sweating it out a lot. in houses with like open windows and the sun going down, and me and my buddy, like Adam, being like 13 or 14 and being in a darkened room and just trying to keep the lights off, and you know, the sun going down and it being so hot and hearing crickets outside, and there was just screens, you know, it wasn't air conditioning, it was screens, and just to the outside, it was just, we'd be sweating. And I remember he had this like radio in his room. It was a darkened room, and all I could see was vague light coming in from outside, but I could see the blue glow. I remember very clearly the blue glow of the dial, and there was a big kind of metal knob, like about the size of a silver dollar. And I was flipping through the stations, and this always happens to me. I'll come across a song or a band, and I'll just go, oh, I hate this. And I'll start obsessing over it and thinking about how much I fucking hate it. But what's really happening is I'm actually, there's something strange inside happening, and I actually really love it. I love the song and not realize that. Like, I did that with the Arctic Monkeys. I kept being like, God, this song, Do I Want to Know, man. It's just terrible. Can you? I'd, like, tell everybody that could hear how bad it was. Before you know it, I'm like, you know, a month later, I'm buying the record and loving it. And anyway, Guns N' Roses, I heard it was Sweet Child of Mine. And I don't know if I'd heard the song before that, but I remember it came on and I'm just talking shit to my buddy about it. I'm, you know, going, like, listen to these assholes, man. You know, and the context was like, I was like 89, 88. And I was probably, yeah, 13, 14. More like 12 or 13, I guess. You know, Two Live Crew was hot. We would just like, we didn't get stoned back then, but like our relief was renting dirty comedians from, my grandmother didn't know, and she would just rent the, you know, Raw by Eddie Murphy, Andrew Dice Man, Andrew Dice Clay, rather, the Andrew Dice Man, Andrew Dice Clay, you know, and like Two Live Crew. We would just sit in like our room. There wasn't a TV, you know, really. There wasn't internet. You just sit there, and we'd like play Two Live Crew on the transistor radio. It wasn't, I'm sorry, not transistor radio. One of those little recorders, you know, it's like 6 inches by 10 inches, and you push the button and the little cassette thing pops up with one speaker. Pretty primitive, but you know, I remember listening to Two Live Crew. It was the funniest thing on earth. They're watching Eddie Murphy Raw. And you know, or Eddie Murphy Delirious, actually, which was better, you know. So anyway, that was the time frame. Guns N' Roses came on the radio, Sweet Child of Mine, the blue dial, and I'm like talking shit about this song, like, listen, this band, blah blah blah. But then the part in that song starts going like, where do we go, where do we go now, where do we go? It comes on, and all of a sudden, like, I just start tuning in, and I go silent, and I'm listening, and it's so dark, and it's mesmerizing. And I right then became a fan of Guns N' Roses, like, immediately, you know, that dark part of Sweet Child of Mine at the end, it's brilliant, you know, and that was my shit. I remember, I think shortly thereafter for my birthday, I got the Appetite for Destruction cassette. And it was black and had this crucifix on it with all those heads. And I just thought it was the coolest thing. And even, I think it was eighth grade. And we all hit it. We all loved Guns N' Roses, like me and a few of my buddies. And my buddy ordered pewter Appetite for Destruction crucifixes out of a magazine. We all wore those. And I had a buddy who, like, gave mine back to me. He had, like, stolen it for 15, 20 years and gave it back to me. And as soon as, like, you know, or as close as 3 or 4 years ago, I had it. I hope I still have it. It might be in storage. I really hope I can find it. It might be in my guitar effects case. Anyway, I remember thinking Axl Rose was the shit, loving his rebellious attitude. And I think Guns N' Roses were legitimately one of the greatest bands of all time. Because they combined punk energy with serious musicianship and a unbelievable lead singer, a showman, you know, who was basically on fire, like burning from the inside out. Axl Rose was incredible. I mean, he can't sing like that anymore, but, you know, he came on so strong. He was just a banshee. I mean, go ahead and look at Guns N' Roses live at the Ritz. And tell me if there's a better rock band that's ever existed, a more vicious, more ferocious, more like, you know, these guys were misfits, like the Ramones, right? Where individually, highly questionable people, you know, presumably. Axl Rose, fucking up on like statutory rape charges. Slash was obviously a drunk. Izzy was a heroin dealer. Duff seemed to be on the up and up. Well, no, that's now. I think he drank a lot. And Steven Adler got kicked out of the band for doing more drugs than the rest of them. But together, that original five, I can't think of a greater, honestly, I can't think of a greater band, period. And Billy Joe Armstrong, when he inducted them into the Hall of Fame, you know, he called Axl crazy, and it was great. Steven Adler got to play with them. And that guy had like a stroke, and I feel like feel for that guy. He seems like a good dude, and he seems like, you know, he had a dream like anybody else in Guns N' Roses, and he just got booted the fuck out of that band. And then GNR did Use Your Illusion, and they were pretty good with Matt Sorum. And the stuff that they wrote with Matt Sorum and recorded with Matt Sorum was decent, but they never could play the Appetite for Destruction stuff with Matt Sorum, the drummer from The Cult. So it's all about that synergy, right? I was talking about earlier that synergy of people just together. Unbelievable. And it's all very simple. You know, I was listening to, it's funny, today I was listening to Chinese Democracy. I was listening to that while I was working out, and I figured out it's the greatest workout record. Hey, I like mellow music too. You know, I like Elliott Smith. I'm a fan of Cat Power. I'm a fan of beautiful, slow, thoughtful, melodic music. But it's not something you want to work out to, you know. Guns N' Roses is perfect. Kiss is really great to work out to. What else do I like? Mr. Crowley is a good song. I even played some Queensryche today. There's a song called Jet City Woman, and I used to love that song when I was about, I don't know, 13 or 14, whenever it was out, maybe 15. And I think I knew it was about Seattle Jet City. They call Seattle Jet City. And I would end up in Seattle about, you know, 5 years later. So anyway, I was listening to Chinese Democracy today, and it's a fabulous record. Not every single track is totally amazing, but they're all like unbelievable musicianship. They had Buckethead in there. Just the lineup that Axl did, it's a serious, like, hardcore metal pop record, and it's heavy, and Axl sings like a fucking banshee. And earlier today, I was okay, so back up a little bit. I guess what got me on the Guns N' Roses tip today, it's funny what sparks these things, and I'm thinking what happened was why I'm even talking about it. I'm thinking about making a live EP out of that recording that me and my cousins did. Right now, the name of the band is called the Skinned Me a Deer Boys. And I'm thinking about doing a lot, like making it sound like it's live, like it was recorded in some, not like a banging like 1,000-seater club, but like a 300-seat venue, you know, half attended, like 150 people getting into it, making it almost believable that we're actually playing in front of people, but then clearly in the liner notes kind of saying this was recorded in the studio, it was not in front of a live, because the intention wouldn't be to act as if we have a following, the intention would be to make, like, to have a hype track, like a sizzle track, you know, and it's very effective, and I started thinking about that, and I wanted to pattern it, you know, I'm being very generous here, after Guns N' Roses. Their very first release was called Live Like a Suicide, and it was a four or five, I believe five song. It was Move to the City, Reckless Life, Nice Boys Don't Play Rock and Roll, Mama Kin, and another one. Anyway, it sounds like it's the greatest concert you've ever seen. Kiss Alive is also that way, where they blew up when they did this live thing. So it's kind of a weird trick, but it's kind of interesting. You know, you can't help the human, you can't help empathizing when you hear people, even if it's fake people, like laugh tracks in old sitcoms. You know, they got people laughing. And so who knows? Maybe this will get people clapping when I put fucking people clapping on my EP. But Guns N' Roses did that on their first release, Live Like a Suicide. They even pretended like it was on an indie label called Uzi Suicide, but the fact was Geffen just did that to try to get some indie credibility. I mean, that shit's always been happening, right? Payola, just fakery, you know, tricks to try to get people, you know, in the door. But I guess it worked, right? Guns N' Roses is one of the most successful bands of all time. And Billy Joe Armstrong said that their first record, they have the greatest first record of any band of all time. I would believe it. There's not a lot of records better than Appetite for Destruction. And the fact that that was pretty much their first offering as an LP, pretty fucking stunning. Anyway, I was in my my room at my work, and I started trying to sing one of the songs off that EP, off the Guns N' Roses EP, Live Like a Suicide. And it's so challenging, and it's so high. And I was kind of pulling it off, because I used to love to try to sing like Axl when I was like a teenager. But I figured that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to strengthen my voice by attempting to sing like that, super high. And after 5 minutes of singing by myself, I hope nobody was listening out in the hallways, because they would have thought somebody was being murdered inside there, or I was being murdered. But anyway, I'm going to strengthen my voice through Axl Rose voice coaching. He has no idea, but that's what I was doing today. And so I didn't think about it, but when I went to the gym today, I thought of Chinese Democracy. Bam, had a great workout. Do you guys work out? Does anybody out there see the benefit in that? I think it's very, very important. I mean, I'm certainly not a picture of studliness and health, but I feel so good, and I'm in so much better shape now than I was 2 years ago. And when I walked into that gym, I had a head filled with dread and change and gray and heartbroke and confusion and mental illness, and people around me were going through mental illness things, mentally ill feelings, and it was coming off onto me. I was in a new place. I was in Greensburg. I was dealing with my father, and he's an amazing person, but you know, he's got some issues now, and it was really hard. I walked into that gym, and that was my therapy, and I've probably been to the gym on average since that day I walked in. On average, three times a week, probably, you know, literally. And the only thing that keeps me from being more of an Adonis would be the fact that my diet is horrible. If I can get my diet down, oh man, it'd be good. It's about control, you know. But I'm not that guy. I don't care that much. I'm, you know, a little sloppy. I don't know. People talk shit, and I don't like it. Maybe if I tightened up, you know, people wouldn't talk shit. I don't know. Would they? Do you guys feel like people talk shit to you, or do you feel like they respect you? It's very interesting. I mean, even my grandmother was like saying things lately, you know, like, oh, that's foolish. I don't know. She lives next door, and she helps my dad, and we both help. She does the heavy lifting, as pathetic as that is, because she, you know, she just doesn't work. I have to work and things like that. But I think that's all a self-fulfilling prophecy, though, that whole people talking shit to you and you constantly being the victim in your life. I think it's like self-esteem based or something. Does self-esteem exist? And self-esteem is being fearful of being, I don't know what it is, but anyway, we won't go there. How you guys doing? I hope you're enjoying the shit show with J-Bo. What else? I just, woo, where are we going to go from here? Where are we going to go from here? Something interesting happened to me about 2 or 3 years ago. And I just like doing these trips down memory lanes. I hope you guys find them interesting. Because sometimes it's all I can talk about, you know, it's the easiest thing that comes to my mind. And I don't know. Fuck, man. I'm a hooker. I'm a prostitute for just giving out all the precious info. As Ariel Pink might put it, the interview of a lifetime. I interview myself all the fucking time. Ariel Pink, if you're listening, You should come on my show again someday, dude. I have a feeling that that dude listens every once in a while, but I don't know for sure. I fantasize about who might be listening about my podcast. I know there's a few people in England listening. I wonder what they think. Is there people? Hey, English people, hit me up, man. Is that Kevin Wilde? Is that who's listening? Possibly. Kevin Wilde's a friend of mine in Liverpool. What's up, dude? So I went to a Donald Trump rally to see what all the hype was about 3 years ago, before he was president. And I ran into this guy who I now know, his name is Dylan Marin. And he does this, he's a cool dude. He does this show called Conversations with People That Hate Me. And I'm going to be on his show like this week. It's so funny because he went to a Trump rally trying to troll Trump people into saying something really stupid. He acted like he was a big Trump fan. And then he made a video, like basically trolling all these people. And I think it's funny. Like, I don't mind that. You see like Jimmy Kimmel on The Man Show trying to end women's suffrage. And women are signing up for it. They just don't know what suffrage means. It means the right to vote. But it sounds like suffering. So, you know, I love that shit. It's funny. Tricking people into exposing people's idiocies. If Dylan Marin at the Trump rally comes up to me and he's like, yeah, man, he's trying to egg me on to say something about Hillary. Something horrible about her, like, looks or something, you know. And then he started saying, like, about politically correctness and how politically correctness has got to go. We should be able to insult anybody we want and say horrible things. And I remember stopping him and being like, well, dude, actually, that's not what it's about. It's not about dropping, like, the N-bomb or calling somebody a retard. Anything like that. It's not. I mean, I guess some people take it that way. And that's what – it's really about being able to have a conversation. If there's – a problem in society with a certain sect of society and to be able to speak freely, whether you're right or wrong, and not be labeled, you know, a racist or a bigot for bringing it up. And that's the way to control your speech and to push you to the side. And I told him I really liked Milo Yiannopoulos, and he said he did too. I think he said he was a gay man at that point. And I said the very first, you guys can find it. You can look for it. But the very first thing, the segment opens with me going, the first rule about being a Donald Trump supporter is you don't talk about being a Donald Trump supporter. And he actually was very kind to me. He kind of lambasted a few other people that had said some more outrageous, like, shitty things. But I had a feeling that anything I said might be used against me. So I was being very diplomatic. I guess I was being very politically correct. But anyway, I see the dude talking about people that hate him. I would see his tweets, you know, recently, and what the hell was it? I don't know. He was just, I thought he was being a hypocrite somehow. I forget exactly what he said, but something he said triggered me into being like, dude, you're no fucking victim. I remember you. You know, people at Trump rallies have podcasts. They have Twitter accounts. They know you. They see who you are, dude. You're like a 6-foot-tall, good-looking gay dude with a talk show, you know? Like, I see you, bro. Don't be a hypocrite. You aren't a victim. You fucking trolled me and then used it against me without my permission. So he can't have that. So he immediately, like, messaged me, right? And he wanted to play nice, and he's like, I'm sorry, I'm not that person anymore, and I want to be better about it. I'm really sorry. And so he offered a chance for me to get on the show, and so he can, like, cleanse his sins of his previous self with me and apologize basically or something like that. It's going to go like that somehow. And he said I could have final edit and, you know, before he puts it out. But what I'm also going to do is I'm going to record the phone conversation and put it out as a podcast on my show. And I'm sure he'll be fine with that. But I'm just going to record the conversation. I'm sure he'll edit the fuck out of it and do whatever he does. My favorite way, and it's partially because I'm really, like, lazy, but also there's a reason I think it's a natural way to do things. I don't edit podcasts very often. As you can probably tell, there's some stops, some hiccups, some mistakes, some stupid things said for sure. But I find it too laborious to edit podcasts. I think I'm doing okay without editing them. They probably would be a little bit better, but they aren't going to be that much better. And it's not worth spending an extra 20 minutes at this point when I'm just doing rapid fire stream of consciousness weekly podcasts anyway. So guys, look out for that in a couple weeks. This is my third podcast I've stacked now. So Tuesday I'm going to put one out and I just have four for the next couple weeks. On Tuesday, I believe I'm going to have a guy named Dave Kiernan on my show. Look forward to that. It's going to be sick. He's a good friend of mine, and we're going to talk about censorship. Censorship is a big fucking deal to me. I don't know if you guys have picked up on that, but I believe in free speech, and I don't believe America, corporate America, big tech, is a shining example of free speech. It's not even their fault. I think they believe they're doing the right thing and they have the power to turn down voices that they don't agree with. But I don't agree with that. And they honestly, I don't want more government control, you know? But wouldn't it be nice if if something could be done, you know, maybe these guys are a monopoly. Maybe, think about it. If Google banished all conservative voices, Google, I don't know what the statistics are, but I'm sure most people just fucking use Google, right? It's a verb at this point. Let's Google it. Let's do this, that. We could say Bing. We could say DuckDuckGo. But the fact is Google's the biggest. If they banished all conservative, they haven't done this, but they've banned not just Google, but, you know, Twitter, Facebook. There's enough of a bias where basically it could affect elections. And I think that's total and utter horseshit. That's my main thing. These motherfuckers, they're propaganda arms for one side of the political aisle or the other, and they can get people elected. When you suppress information, you win elections. I mean, it doesn't take much. You suppress every strong voice for Donald Trump, the left wins every time. Google has that power. Is it a monopoly? I don't know. Should Trump step in and break it up? That'd be very self-serving. And big government. I personally don't believe in big government, but it's a thought, I suppose. Some people don't seem to be worried about it, but me and Dave are going to break it all down on Tuesday. I'm going to do my due diligence and think about it, and hopefully you guys enjoy it. Anyway, thank you. You know what? I'm sorry. Forget all. No, we will. I'll arrange it just right. I was going to say, if I'm stacking these podcasts, when am I going to put this out? I will put what you're hearing today in 1 week. You'll hear me and Dave talk about censorship. So tune into that, okay? This is J-Bo. This has been The Shit Show with J-Bo. Go check out Alien Tango, would you? He's a great motherfucker. I think he's a total genius. Total weirdo. Total lovable guy from Spain via London. Anyway, this is The Shit Show with J-Bo. See you guys next week. And listen, I got a t-shirt on. It says, "We are all Alex Jones. Don't censor me." I'm not joking about that. Sunlight is the best disinfectant. Okay, let's have a debate. Let's not censor people, okay? Take care. Bye.